loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
Hello, and welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. This is episode number 11, and you are in for a fun ride today, as this episode was taken from my interview with probably the happiest man in Chicago, the maestro of culture, wine wizard, and a very good friend, Brian Duncan from Bin 36 fame. And Brian's energy and passion are contagious, and there are some priceless pieces of information in this interview on ways to improve your restaurant. So sit back and enjoy. And good evening, everybody. Welcome to another RCU live event, sponsored, of course, by the Restaurant Coach University, the premier online learning platform for restaurants that want to maximize their potential. And for those who understand school's never out for the true professional, I am very welcome. I'm very happy tonight to talk about some topics. We're going to talk a little bit about culture. We're going to talk about teamwork. And we're also going to talk about wine with the wine wizard himself. I am so happy to have tonight on the show a good friend of mine that lives in Chicago named Brian Duncan. If you're from Chicago, he's pretty well known there. So, Brian, why don't you just tell everybody a little bit about yourself for those who don't actually get to Chicago that often. So,
well, I should probably be the mayor because I'm the happiest guy in Chicago.
You so are. You
let's,
are.
Let's start there. I've got good reason to be happy. I've lived I feel like a fascinating life. Had a lot of my personal dreams come true. I've been in the hospitality business, restaurants and so forth for a good majority of my life. And I've been able to travel and see some of my ideas manifested through some of the restaurants that I've had in the past. And after all of the years, I had a restaurant called Bin 36 here in Chicago downtown, which many of my friends and family members know very well. And I got the opportunity to prove some things to myself personally and to the industry at large that could be accomplished, that at the core of everything you do, no matter how good your food and wine program is, hospitality has to be at the foundation. And I count it a privilege to have been able to operate Bin 36 for so long. And all of the mentors that I had over the years that instilled the importance of genuinely, authentically caring about people's experiences and what a profound service it is to help people celebrate life around the table and create incredible, memorable experiences. So we have a lot to talk about. My family is responsible for making me perfect for not doing anything else with my life, but sort of being in service and teaching and hopefully mentoring other people now. Yeah. I'm a lucky guy.
Yeah, you. And I have to say, that's where I met you years ago when I worked for Wolfgang Puck, and I was in Chicago and I worked at Spago Chicago, and I was doing some of the catering stuff at the MCA, for yeah. Wolf. And then I used to go to Bin 36 was my favorite place to go.
We were neighbors.
Yeah. You know, the thing I always thought Bin 36 was so cutting edge is that, you know, the food, the wine program and the service and just that art of hospitality, it all came together. And I would always tell all my friends, if you're in Chicago, man, you got to go by Bin 36. You want to get just an experience of what hospitality is really like. Because we talk about service all the time. But I think one of the words that really has lost a definition or really lost a lot of value in our restaurant industry is the word hospitality.
You're absolutely right. And they are two different, distinctly different things. That to me, early on, knowing the difference between, many of us have gone into Japanese restaurants where they, you know, they bow and everybody speaks and it's kind of automatic and things like that. Or there are other institutions that people know that will go nameless where it's kind of canned. And human beings innately know the difference, what's authentic and what who's been told to say such and such a thing. And it, because it doesn't come out, the presentation is out of context, sort of in a way.
It's true. Well, you know, body language makes up a big way of how we communicate. 55% of how we communicate is nonverbal. And, you know, your body language really reinforces. And like you said, people can tell when you're just phoning it in and it's canned. And I like to tell a story about body language. I was at a restaurant here, actually, in Albuquerque. I won't say who they are.
You'll tell me later.
Yeah. It's a barbecue place. And I like ribs. You know? And so I went, and they were supposed to be really well known for their ribs. And I asked the waitress, I asked the server, I said, "So how are the ribs?" And she does this. "They're good." I was like, okay, I'll have the brisket, I guess.
Yeah, tonight we're not having ribs.
I'm not having ribs tonight, I guess. So something happened, I guess. I know it was not a good idea. So
my favorite is when I go to a place and I'll ask about a particular item and they'll say, "Oh, I don't eat meat."
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Yeah, how's the ribeye? I don't know. I'm not a meat eater.
With a little condescension.
I know, real condescension, not a little. I mean, that is like, I didn't know. And then you look at the menu and go, I didn't see condescending attitude was on the menu. So
right, it was a special, but they forgot to mention it.
They did not mention that. And they serve that up. A lot of restaurants serve that up freely.
Yes,
and they should take that off the menu. They should definitely take that off the menu. I do not need condescension with my menu and my food. So, yeah. So you've got a lot, you know, Ben 36, a great, great restaurant, you know, definitely one of those iconic restaurants, I think, of the Chicago restaurant scene. And now you're doing some really cool stuff with wine, right? And you got to...
Yeah, I started a consulting company a little over 2 years ago, Down to Earth Wine Concepts. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a funny story because coming up with a name, I don't know how most people go about it, but it has to feel authentic and organic in its own way, at least for me. And by accident, something really kind of wonderful happened. My approach has always been to create environments and experiences where people learn things automatically.
Yes.
And sometimes by accident. I think that there are really skillful ways that you can weave fun into the experience where people discover things that they'll never forget and the light bulbs go on. That is one of the reasons that I still do introductory wine classes and that they're my favorites. I do in-store demos, which a lot of people, as they rise in their experience over the years, they have a tendency to do less of direct public contact.
Right.
And that's what I really miss is that table side or that I don't know you, you don't know me, but I have a product I'd like to share with you. And that's where all of the action is. That's where I've forgotten the kind of questions that a novice wine drinker will ask me. And it'll challenge me to put it in another way that they are moved on to the next chapter of their wine experience. So that's been very, very rewarding. So my company, I created it so that I could grow into it. My mother used to say something interesting. She says, when you buy a house, you don't furnish it before you move in. In other words, you need to live in it and go through the traffic patterns and begin to understand how you want to use the house. And then you optimize your living experience. And so I treated my business that way. And it's called Down to Earth Wine Concepts. But when I looked at it later on, I realized it's my family's name, Duncan, and my mother's maiden last name, Thomas, DT, and the E is Down to Earth, Duncan Thomas Enterprises. So I was able to wrap my family's experience in it.
Nice.
They were the people who turned me into this, you know, vigorously shaken bottle of champagne about life. And so I'm able to pay tribute to them and their influence in my life at the same time. First, what I wanted to do, I think, was to continue doing wine education, and I've been able to do that. The other thing that I've been able to do is to do some fun stuff like help wineries that are or importers that are trying to find representation in Illinois. And since I've bought from every distributor and know everybody in the market, I'm kind of a good person to kind of be a matchmaker in that way and hopefully find the right size. Some people don't think about this side of the business, but certain distributors have too many wines, too many domestic wines, or too many wines from a certain region of the world, and you need to be very careful about how you're positioning so they don't have direct competition. And so I help make marriages that way.
There
and,
you go.
That's really fun for me. And I only do it with wines that I love. So they have to be very special. And they're great stories. I miss telling the stories tableside. So this gives me a way to do it in another way. So,
you know, and a lot of people forget that, you know, the wine is a story, and even anything too, food, wine, beverage, bourbon, I don't care. There's a story behind it. And a lot of times when I'm working with clients, the big thing I teach them is don't just sell me, tell me.
Sure.
You know, tell me the story, tell me the emotion behind it. Now you got my interest, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. One of the first wineries that I had helped, you know, find new representation, mm-hmm. There were personal friends of mine, and I made wine in the same area, the same appellation in the Santa Lucia Highlands, and they were 5 miles away from where I was doing my work, and I would spend the nights at their house, you know, and every time I would go back and forth throughout the season, and so I got to see the family up close and personal, and I know that how connected they are to the land, and a lot of people don't realize do you know that it's predicted in less than 5 years over the half of the wineries in America are going to be corporately owned?
Oh, no way.
If that train has already left the station.
Oh, wow.
So what that means for us is that a lot of these big companies, they don't produce anything, they acquire.
Yes.
So they're not connected to the land. There wasn't something that was passed down. They take things that were already made and molded into something really special. And people's families, blood, sweat, and tears are in that soil. That's who I can get out and sort of stomp around about. But they're not going to have the same, let's say, connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so those stories are not as attractive for me to tell. But I do want to remind people it's important. If you remember the Borders and Barnes and Nobles, and they wiped out so many family bookstores. Yes. And where are those bookstores now? And where are Barnes and Noble?
Yeah.
So I read something just before on my way to settle in tonight, and it's very short. 68 Macy's stores are closing, all limited stores closing, 108 Kmart stores closing, 42 Sears stores closing. Mm-hmm. The largest transportation provider in the U.S. doesn't own a single car, Uber. The largest hotel company in the world doesn't own a single hotel, Airbnb. Amazon just passed Walmart as the nation's biggest retailer and much more valuable, and they don't own a single retail store. So I only wanted to say that because I thought, what great timing, because the industries are changing so fast. And I hope we have a chance to really talk about what I was prophesying about the restaurant industry and how it was evolving. And that train has left the station. And I've seen a few articles here and there about it, but there's something really interesting happening with restaurants.
What is it?
Well,
don't leave me hanging now, man.
Well, it's like think about it.
I need some popcorn or something, Brian. You got me like, it's like an action movie here.
You're not very well prepared for this interview.
I'm not prepared. I didn't bring popcorn. I did not bring popcorn. That's it. That's it. I'm out.
Well, here's the thing. One of the things that I saw happening was we were teaching people about everything. We're teaching people about wine. We were teaching them about beer. We're teaching them how to cook.
Yes.
And they've gotten to be very sophisticated about all of that stuff. And so people are cooking more. Then I started to see, remember when hotels used to be very just these corporate enclaves and it was very business? And then they turned hip and cool. As a matter of fact, a lot of them you can go in, you think you're in a disco or a club. I just aged myself.
But
you think you're in an after-hours club.
Yeah.
And you can't even really hear. But what they started creating experiences. So they changed. Mm-hmm. Before restaurants really changed, and restaurants has begun to catch up a little bit with sort of broadening the kinds of experiences that you have. Meanwhile, supermarkets decided we need to pick up our game a little bit.
Right.
So now what can you do? you no longer have to go out to a restaurant and make a reservation. And I don't know, in Chicago, a lot of people, because traffic is so bad here, they don't want to get in their car or they don't want to leave their homes, right, you know, after they've planted in this new neighborhood. So these supermarkets have opened up and they're competing with each other and outdoing each other with product and the variety that's available to you, the freshness, and they're cooking dinner for you. They're cooking lunch for you. People are gathering and meeting. It's becoming a place to, a new place for hospitality, a new place to gather. They can, you know, buy their wine retail and not have to worry about dressing up. And some of them really should dress up a little more even to go out to the supermarket, but it's already happening. Like I said, you know, that horse has left that barn. But it's interesting because I think who it's going to hurt is the independent restaurateur.
Right.
And there's the ingredients are all there. The whole idea of hourly wage and the margins are so small in restaurants, people don't really understand. And when you really have put your heart and soul and blood and sweat and tears for the hours that we work in that business, a lot of restaurateurs have to be asking the question, is it even worth it anymore? So no one is better positioned to take away that business from that mid-level independent restaurant than our supermarkets right now. I see whole families going and having meals, and it's really something to see. So they're spreading out. I look at Chicago, and we're saturated with incredible restaurants, and even good restaurants sometimes can't be sustainable in that climate. So, you know, I'm excited to help people who really want to stay in it and commit to it, help them not make mistakes that are going to cost them, because there's only so many bodies to go around. And then the Yelpification, you know, the customer now doesn't have to go to a place more than once.
Right.
Because now it's a notch on your bedpost to go someplace, say, been there, done that.
Check in.
That's not, we need to repeat customers. We need to come back. We need loyalty, but we're fostering something different with social media and things like that. And you have to be a social media guru. You can't just have good food, and you just can't just have an attractive, comfortable place for people to come. You have to spend part of your time and your money being out there and sort of being in people's consciousness. So did I cover enough of that stuff?
I think you did. That was good. Okay. You know, I write a lot. I do a lot. I write for Foodable TV. And one of the things we talk about is that hybrid, you know, that we call it grocery knots, you know, it's kind of grocery restaurants and how they're really changing the market. And then one of my predictions, and you've already probably seen, I know you've seen it in Chicago, like with Revival food halls.
Yeah.
The next big
thing. Glorified food courts that were really great food and great beverages. And place is rocking.
They're all rocking. There's one down in Houston called Conservatory, and they are just, I mean, it's great. And they're also very trendy too. And if one of the vendors in the place isn't doing that well, they'll replace them. They just, you know, they just put in a new pokey is the new thing. And man,
that's going like wildfire.
It's crazy, like wildfire down there. And that place is, I mean, it's packed all the time, you know, and it's a great, here's the thing about food halls. I think is a great concept. It's a great entry level for especially up and coming restaurateurs. Instead of, you know, investing, you know, hundreds of thousand dollars into a brick and mortar establishment, you can easily go into a food hall, test your concept out, get your business practices down, refine your menu and stuff like that, and then really build a following, and then springboard into a bigger, you know, location if you want.
That's exactly what they've done.
Perfect. Exactly. I mean, they're awesome. So let's talk real. Let's go back. Let's travel back in time to, you know, Bin 36. Let's talk about culture. And, you know, how, because I think that's probably one of the things that I think is hurting the restaurant business now is we don't really have a lot of this, you know, this kind of, we don't have culture anymore. Culture has kind of gone to the wayside. Again, like you said, even tons of talented chefs out there, tons of people that can cook there. I mean, just cook incredible food, but you go to their place and there's just no, you know, just there's no atmosphere. There's no life. There's no, you know.
Yeah, there's a disconnect, and part of it, this is interesting, we are communicating more, but we're communicating less effectively.
Yes.
And so if you don't think that's true and you see a family sitting around the table at dinner and everybody's on a cell phone, even the 2 and 3 year olds, and which is doing this. My mind, nobody's talking or anything like that.
Right.
And I'm wondering if we're breeding another generation or two of people whose communication skills are just going to be stifled impeded in some really profound ways. So one of the things that I find myself doing a lot of teaching, I can teach anybody about food and wine, how to be a better taster, how to increase your vocabulary, both on food and wine, to make it attractive and enticing based on, you know, your experience. But what I think is the crowning achievement is teaching someone who has been doing this most of their life how to dispense hospitality.
Yes.
That, to me, that's the win-win. So a lot of times if I'm working with a new restaurant or working with a restaurant that's reconcepting, or they're desperate because they don't know what's wrong with their business, and they bring people like you and I in as a consultant, the first place that I want to start is with the people, and I want to make them happy. I want them I come walking in the door and I say, I'm quite possibly the happiest guy you're ever going to meet on the face of the earth. And usually in the first 15, 20 minutes, they're convinced.
Yes.
And I teach them about how you own that, that it isn't outside of you, that it's something that is something that you can carry and you don't give other people the keys to. And once you start there, that foundation, then you can help people be more comfortable in their own skin and that the place that they're coming to work every day can be their oasis, no matter what's going on in the rest of their life.
Right.
I always used to say to my team, I don't want you to look at your clock every day and go, oh, it's 2 o'clock. I got to go to work now. I want them to go, I wonder what they're going to show us today. I wonder what the chef's doing today. And I was a nut. I mean, seriously, my volume was turned up so high. I tell people I have two personality flaws that I've learned to work in my favor. One is I have a short attention span, and I have commitment anxiety. And the way that works with wine and food is I was constantly falling in love with wines every day, 2 or 3 or 4.
Right.
And just when I thought, you know, my head was going to pop off because of this great new wine, here comes another one. And then, you know, they just keep going. So the staff, their volume gets turned way up. Who benefits from that? It trickles down to the table, the culture. Yes. The culture was there's always going to be something new, always something exciting. Next, and we're all going to be excited about it. And then we're going to turn our guest into the expert. And they're going to leave our doors and they're going to tell somebody else about something, Moscofilo Roe or something that they've tried that, you know, that never had tasted before. And be just as enthused about it as we are. So those things you can begin to teach people how to do. And that's why I want to interject right now is the other project that I'm consulting with is not a website. It is a search engine for everything food, wine, and hospitality.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I've got the address is www.go-wine.com. www.go-wine.com. There it is.
There you
Beautiful.
Go.
Beautiful. So
now, and you shall receive, my friend.
I am not a techie person. But when I saw this, my brain just about exploded because think of this as the Google for wine, hospitality, and entertainment. It groups everything together so that if, again, you're a novice or you're working in the wine industry or you're a chef or you travel or you're, you know, a master sommelier, all the information has been consolidated for you here. It's one-stop shopping. This is next level stuff, and I'm so excited to be a part of this. It's a group of industry professionals who are providing content, some of the most amazing writing about wine and food and hospitality and travel. It has the technical side for the wine geeks who want to know about, you know, different kinds of barrels and different the chemistry of wine. It has fun facts about wine and the history of it. One of the things that I wish that when I had my restaurant was that I had a place like this. When I started buying wine for a living, it was in 1996, and I ended up with sciatica because there weren't computers. We weren't using computers like we do now, and I was carrying around a backpack that was full of huge books, and it affected my spine. Well, this is the easiest thing to use. If I can navigate this thing, wineries on this thing are on steroids. It's like there's these 3D images where you can go to the winery. You can view the vineyard at angles. You can see the property. Those of you who have never been to a vineyard, so you don't have that experience of understanding why a wine tastes like it does based on the environment around it, that's all going to change. It's changed now. So I really encourage you, you should follow us on Twitter at GoWine.com1. And we're publishing, and I'm helping spread the Go Wine word out there. It's fun. It's a visual experience that we've not yet seen or in the realm of wine anyway. So constantly growing every day.
Yeah, when you first got involved in the website, you sent me over a link to it, and I checked it out, and it is everything you said it is, plus.
Plus.
I'm telling you, plus. It is an amazing, amazing resource for today's restaurant professional. And if you have any kind of wine program at all, you need to bookmark this because you need to go there and check this out because it is that valuable.
Yeah.
And there's tons of resources on it. I mean, tons of information. I mean, I got lost one night and I think I was up to like, you know, I kind of got, it's like a kind of a maze and you kind of get into it. Next thing you know, you're like looking, all of a sudden you're looking at the watch, you go, oh my God, it's 2 a.m. I go to bed. You know,
the veils like, keep coming back.
I gotta go to bed here. I'm like so far into the wine maze, I just can't get out.
It's the most exciting thing I've seen in terms
of it is really awesome.
And I like, thank God I'm not doing the, you know, writing code or anything for it.
Yeah.
That's way beyond me. The fact that I can even say that makes me sound geeky. But what I can say is that this is next level. My brain is wired that however we've been doing things, it's easy to get stuck in an industry. And it was what frustrated me and caused me to open Bin 36. I wanted wine to be approachable for people. Mm-hmm. I didn't want it to be, you shouldn't have to be a master sommelier to get a decent glass of wine in a restaurant. But if you want to learn more, all of that information is available to you and it should be available to anyone. And you can do it at your own pace. You dig in at your level. And it's really exciting to be a part of something that's so groundbreaking. It's good at the service level. It's good for consumers. It's good for industry people. It's good for the people in the vineyards at every level. So I'm really excited to be and watch it grow. I like to be at the beginning, you know, when you can really make wholesale contributions that really affect people's opportunities and experiences. So, yeah, it's been exciting.
It's good. So what's I know you fall in love with wine so fast and differently. What would you say is like this week is kind of your wine of choice if you had to pick a wine this week?
This week, you know what? There's something about champagne that just keeps, I'm a Blanc de Blanc guy, so that's, you know, all white grapes generally, if it's champagne, it's got to be Chardonnay. But there's something about the richness of it. And we constantly say in this industry that it's great with everything. Mm-hmm. And it really is. And it goes with from the beginning of the meal to the end. And I hate it that people isolate it for toast because I still want my glass to be filled as I move into the beef or anything else. And so for me, champagne, I tell this story about the night that we opened Bin 36 in December 19, 1999. But my birthday is on the 21st, and that's when we got
our
So the day of, I get it's my birthday and the restaurant is officially open with wine, being a wine concept, it's probably good to have a liquor license. We went to the champagne bar and then I got to pick, you know, my favorite champagne and it was 1982 Salon. And you know, they only make that in great years, and they don't even make the non-vintage version. So I'm just as geeky to record something like this, but the finish on that wine was a minute and 42 seconds.
Wow.
And so I think that I'm one of the, I'm a pretty good describer of things. And I find it, the best wines I've ever had, the best food I've ever had, I sometimes find it difficult to wrap something as insignificant or words around it. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking, this wine is like drinking a liquid kaleidoscope that never stops turning. I will never forget that night.
Yeah,
I will never forget
that. One thing I loved about you at Bin 36, your descriptions of stuff were just so amazing. And like you said, the wine, I'm telling you, the wine program was so approachable. And here's the thing, it was fun.
Yeah,
I mean,
heaven forbid.
It was fun. It was fun. It wasn't stuffy. Because I think too many people, you know, go into a restaurant and they look at the wine list and stuff like that, and they kind of get that nervous kind of twitch going. You know, it's like, I don't know. And
this
isn't
for me. I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to say the wrong thing.
I don't know. Yeah.
I used to tell people, do you know why babies cry? They tell you what they want. And that's what's wrong with, you know, when people get into restaurant situations like that and they start using whatever they've heard. Oh, we like it oaky, dry, and sweet. And, you know, they start using, just spewing out whatever they've heard.
Whatever they heard, yeah.
And I taught our people how to say, what do you like to drink, even if it's not wine? And I gave them the power and the freedom to go get them taste of things and have a frame. And people love that you cared enough about where they were. And instead of trying to take them on a trip someplace that they didn't really want to go.
Yeah, that's one thing I hate. Don't try to force a wine down my, you know, down my throat. I mean, you know, again, ask me questions. Ask me what I like. You know, I'm more of a, I like sweet wines, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a sweet wine kind of guy. You know, I just, that's me. I just like the sweet stuff, you know.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, but, you get to enjoy what you want. And I as a buyer, I have to buy outside of my own personal taste. If I was, that's called a private club, if you open a place where you only have the stuff you want.
That's it.
And it's also called inhospitable to invite people into your little world.
I know a lot of restaurants owners that have a private wine list for themselves. Yeah. You know what I mean?
They're in the wrong business.
Yeah, definitely in the wrong business. Yeah. So what would you say is a key, a real key to culture? And we talked about it, one thing. Yeah. And one thing I wanted to touch base on is one thing you mentioned earlier. You know how you, you know, and trust me, I've met you. You know, you are the happiest man I've ever met in my life. It's no lie. This guy is like the happiest man ever. You know, he's like
I've been incredibly blessed.
But here's the thing. Culture flows down. It doesn't flow up. Culture always starts with the owner, operator, manager, chef, who's ever running this team.
Sure.
It starts with them. And here's my thing. I always say, look at it like a scale from 1 to 10. If you hit the floor and you're the leader of the team and your energy is like around an 8, you're only going to be able to have influence on your team. And it's only going to, like, I always tell people, expect to be like 2 levels down. So if you're floating, you walk in the door and you're an 8, your team's going to be like a 5 or a 6.
Yeah.
You know? And here's what 5 or 6 is. That's average. Yeah. And you know what average is? Average sucks. Okay. Yeah.
And I mean, closes after a
average
while.
Average restaurants close pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you overhear an owner of a restaurant or the managers talking about customers, their guests disparaging in front of their staff, you've given them a green light to mistreat people.
That's exactly it.
And they realize it's okay. I don't believe that most of the people that work for me came with the intention of giving the kind of hospitality that I want, that I really expected. I'll never forget the very first orientation for Bin 36. I didn't get to hire not one single person. And I think when we opened, we had well into like 90 or 100 employees, because we open 365 days a year and we were open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And a lot of people don't realize that. And I walked into this room, and I just told people it was like I was in a Spike Lee movie. Like, I was moving down the hallway with my feet never touching the floor. You're like, I was on like some kind of conveyor belt, and that there was fog in the hallway. And we weren't finished with the dining room yet, so we had to meet in the hotel ballroom. And I got down there, and I kept thinking, I'm coming into all of these wonderful, budding future wine sommeliers and directors. And I got in the room and I said, and I was telling them about my concept and my dream. And when the fog began to settle, I decided to ask them about themselves and said, just introduce yourselves and tell everybody a little bit about your experience. And the first girl got up and she said, I'm not going to name her name, but maybe she's watching. She said, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a club kid, and I don't know nothing about wine. And she sat down.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning, and that was probably the best description that I got.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown because it never dawned on me. The concept that I had in my brain was in my brain.
Yeah.
I had to release it somehow and encourage these
that
things.
Is
and
so I was accurate.
Right? I was laying in bed that night and I thought I was gonna have a nervous breakdown. I thought, we're gonna be a laughing stock. And I'm laying in bed and I just like this voice spoke to me. It was like, if you can inspire these kids about this amazing, you know, thing that you put together, it has no chance of working whatsoever. So you talk about jumping through hoops. I did everything. I pulled rabbits out of hats and everything I could possibly think of to express to these people what a wonderful opportunity it was to share. I turned them into tour guides.
Yes.
And the key was, one day I got tired of hearing the one word responses when I asked them to smell or taste the wine. And I said, okay, we're not going to do wine today. I said, today we're going to do something. I want you to tell me of a hair product that you use that you like. Mm-hmm. And so all these little silent, mute people sat there. And one little girl raised her hand. She says, well, I use this thing called mop. And you put it in, it's like a gel, but you can use it and you can blow. And she started describing this thing in meticulous detail. And then they began to argue with one another over what was the better product. I was like, I'm on to something here. And I said, okay, enough with hair care products. Is clearly I've got mine down. So let's talk about it. Tell me your favorite sandwich.
Yes.
I said, I got a detail. Bread, I need lettuce, salt. And this guy broke down a Burger King Whopper. Made me want to go out and get one.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, so when you guys do this from now on, I want you to make me a sandwich with wine. And that was the turning point.
That was it.
That was the turning point. And they began to use that as sort of their template. And I had a no BS policy. You could never go to a table and someone ask you something and just sort of to get through it, just say, oh, yeah, because of allergies and people can die if certain ingredients are in their food. And so we gave them the power to say, you know what? Let me go and double check that.
Yeah.
And people really do appreciate that because it can be dangerous. And so we kept giving them keys and material and trust and encouragement and turned them into these amazing tour guides. And I couldn't be at every table. And this allowed me to kind of replicate myself, but in their authenticity.
Yes.
And that's the key. That's really the key.
That's the key. And you mentioned, you commented on something that is so key too for a lot of owners. You know, your concept, you know your concept better than anyone. But the thing is, most of it's trapped up in their heads.
Yeah.
And they have to free that. And I always say, your job as an owner, operator, is to get up on your soapbox every day and preach your vision and your culture and your mission. And that's what your job is. It's just to basically, it has to be distilled down, you know?
Donald, you're right. And the other thing is that most people don't think about is a lot of people in the service industry act like every day they come into work is the first day. I love, this is my favorite story. It's like, invariably every day, whoever's job it was to do the candles, they would come and they'd say, where are the candles?
I know.
As though I like you around all morning, like, where am I going to move them today? Man, so they don't hide. I need this table to be set. It's the same stuff.
Gonna hide every day. Everything on them.
And they just decide to give up their brains. And then, but we empowered them with knowledge. Once we began to give them knowledge about food and they realize, one of my servers left, and she went to another restaurant and came back maybe about a year later. And she said, I said, how do you like it? And she says, oh, it's fine. She's like, I don't really like it. I said, why? She said, because she says, they don't really care about us. I said, what do you mean they don't care about you? She said, they don't teach us anything. And that's where she had begun to equate how they felt about her by how much knowledge and information and experience that they were giving her. Empowering people. That's when they know that they're trusted. That's when they know they're valued. That's when how you breed loyalty. When you can take someone, I never look at people's career path with me as a sliding, horizontally. I want you to progress. I want you to constantly progress. Yeah. And the reason that I spend time, like you were saying, preaching to them, it was very common knowledge at Ben 36 that if I wasn't talking to you, I had already given up on you.
Ooh, yeah.
That if I was running in behind you, it's because I could see the potential in you and I was excited for what you were going to become.
Yes. Yeah, we got to make the shift. Too many restaurants have a training culture and not a learning culture.
That's good. Stealing it.
Take it. Run with it.
Yeah.
What residuals?
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, I don't understand. I'm going to tell a story. I don't give this. This is years and years ago. I was managing a place, and there were some busboys and food runners, and they were all Mexican. And they came to me, and they were like, we need a raise, because they would come in groups. And
big groups too.
I was like, you've hit the ceiling in terms of pay rate for what you're doing. And I don't want you to stay there. Right. Michael, I want you to be managers, servers, bartenders, whatever it is that you were, private dining, sales, whatever you want to do. But you have to be able to speak English and communicate. And I will pay for your classes.
Oh, very cool.
If you're going to do this, if you're going to commit to do this, then I can promote you. So the thing that would stifle someone is to say, okay, well, then that's where you end. If you open a door for them to graduate in their skill set, then that's really the way I think that want people to say, you want to raise their pay and they're doing the same job and they've really hit, the maximum of what they're ever going to be able to accomplish at that level, not creating another opportunity. And each and every one of those guys became managers in our restaurant, except for one.
Oh, wow.
Except for one. And they're people that I could always depend on. They knew the business inside and out. They could, in my absence, teach the same kinds of things that I could teach with the same. And they held up the standards in ways that just made me proud. I felt like a papa the whole time I was there. I mean, that's empowering people.
That really is. That's the thing. You got to open that door for growth, man. That's what people want, especially the younger generation. They really want to learn and grow. Mm-hmm. And that's why, mobile access and stuff like that, like Go Wine, those are great tools because, people, don't want to carry around, 25 pounds of books in their backpack,
No, and that was, I was going to circle back because it was one of the reasons that Go Wine was created was to make information should be accessible to all.
Yes, yes.
Knowledge, it should be accessible to all. And I love the fact that it's so user friendly, whatever level that you're at. I looked at Ben 36 as this amazing umbrella that if you were a collector or if you were in the industry like yourself, or you were entry level and never touched wine to your lips, that you could all have a really great experience.
Yes.
And it can be done. I'm always looking ahead. I told you that short attention span allows you to actually, if you can take that, whatever things that people perceive as negative, and you can actually turn it in your favor. I'm looking down the road to see how we can always make something better.
Yes.
And so I'm fortunate. I got to see my dream come true. You've eaten it, Blackbird.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, Paul Kahn and I worked together years ago for Rick Bayless at Topolobampo Frontera Grill. Mm-hmm. And I used to try to steal as many recipes as I possibly could while I was there. But Paul, I've loved his food and his approach for so long. And when I first opened the restaurant, he came in with his wife, and I was coming down the stairs, and he said, how you doing? And I hadn't been to sleep, I don't know in how long, you know, when you first open a place. Oh. And the door, I tell people, opening a restaurant is like, if you've ever seen those air puppets at, mm-hmm. you know, the car dealerships. And once you open that door, that puppet goes up, life gets breathed into it. It takes a life of its own on. Oh, and yeah. He looked at me, and I probably looked like glazed in the eyes, but he said, you look good. I said, you know what? I feel great. I'm tired. I said, but today I'm finally able to put this experience into words. This idea was stuck into my head for so mm-hmm. long that now that it's outside and it's a physical, tactile place,
right?
Every day I'm walking inside of my dream.
That's it.
It's like the safest place for me to be. So it's one of the reasons I feel like I'm one of the most fortunate guys and one of the happiest guys is I've been allowed to dream, first of all. And mm-hmm. then I've been allowed to, in my own hometown, build the kind of place that I knew could be built and that people would enjoy. Yeah. And it's actually, you know, the general manager, Enoch Shelley, took it over. And now it's in a new place under the same name. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a really great job in carrying on that tradition. What a legacy. For me to be able to walk in there and see how that it's replicable and people can do it and enjoy it and it didn't have to end. I think that's a sign of that's success.
What?
That's really success.
How did you pick the number 36, bin 36?
Oh, I love this question.
Most often, ask. You know, this has been actually bothering me for years.
Really?
To ask you? No, I do.
That's funny. So we were working with this incredible firm. They build brands and help people create brands and marketing and so forth. They came up with our logo and our mark. It's called mm-hmm. VSA Partners. Incredible group of people. And we were so slow with coming up with the name, but I knew the moment that I heard it that I would know. I just yeah. was, and it's just something that you feel. And so people were joking. We were sitting around a table one day at lunch, and the graphics people were really like leaning on us now. They were starting to threaten us. And they said, you've got to come up with a name. And somebody just out of the blue said, well, you know, you inventory wine by bin number. Why don't you just pick a number that you like? And I said, like what? Like bin one? And I was like, then they'll say, well, where's bin two? And I was like, nah, 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 nah. And then they all these silly little jokes. And then someone just said it. It said bin 36. And I just thought it sounded sexy, like coming off the lips. And I thought people would remember it. It took a month before we were open. And I realized the 36 Broadway bus comes right in front of the restaurant.
Oh, no.
I didn't even think of that. It's like all these other things, you know, that sort of kind of line up. But
that always happens, doesn't it? As soon as you're all of a sudden you're like, I think they call that the reticular activating system.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you buy a certain car and then all of a sudden everywhere you're like, man, there's a lot of Toyotas around here.
Yeah, all of a sudden you notice them everywhere, right?
Everyone has a Toyota.
Yeah.
I mean, Camrys are around the street. I thought I was like the only one. Now everybody has a Camry. You
know? So I think that being able to throw a party every day of my life and being able to entertain people. I have had the most amazing connections with people, stuff that you wouldn't even believe. Mm-hmm. Some of them will break your heart and some of them you're like, you could not possibly be telling the truth. But what I realized early on was that bringing people around a table.
Yes.
Is that you do life's business, and that means that's a layer cake. You can celebrate life around the table, celebrate births, marriages. You can even, you know, parties. You know, people do. They break up at tables. You know, graduations. All of life's important business is done around a table. All of a head of state business is done with.
Right.
With the inclusion of hospitality, food and beverage. And our job is very it's very humble, mm-hmm. but it's an honorably humble job. service is requires strength and a strong sense of who you are. It is also the word hospitality. At the core of it, the root of it is hospital.
Oh, yes. True.
Restaurant, the root of restaurant is restore, the French word to restore. So that's the foundation. And so as soon as you begin to forget and drift away from that, then you're just serving, you're just eating and drinking. Right. And this is the most simple thing that we do as human beings together. Like I said, I can teach anybody about food and wine, but dispensing hospitality, if that's missing, you're just eating and drinking, and
that's what separates
there's no connection. Separates them. You have to make a connection with people in the business. Otherwise, you can't build loyalty.
You know, that's another thing. Yeah, and that's another thing people should do too. You know, study the history of words. I love the history of words. And like you said, you know, restaurant comes from that French word restore. Mm-hmm. You know, because a guy back in 1765 in Paris, a tavern owner, decided he wanted to sell food to the public, but the guilds controlled it. He went to court. He won. And he sold a thing that was called a restorative. Mm-hmm. So I tell people, when you think about what a restaurant really is, it's a place you go to restore your soul.
That's it.
I said, when you think about that, that's a huge, huge, huge responsibility.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not a mechanical experience.
No. Yeah. And too many places nowadays. And that's why I think that the middle has filled up so much with these average. And I hate to say, and I've said it before, and I say it in a lot of my blog posts, average has become the new standard.
Yeah. Yeah, I read you all the time, and some of the things you're harsh on people because you care about you're a preservationist, I think, like I am.
Yeah,
use some harsh terms, but it's for real. I mean, if we lose this, look at the condition of the world where we are now. If we can't learn to be civil to one another in these customer. And the other one is, one of my favorite lines is, if I have to remind you who the customer is in this relationship, we've definitely got a problem.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
We've definitely got a problem. Definitely. And that goes, that's business to business. Mm-hmm. The people that come into your business, hotel, restaurant, place of business, and I don't confine my consulting just to restaurants. These principles are applicable in any business, yes. Corporate setting, independent or large. My favorite client would be an airline, a domestic airline, and they will go nameless, but I really feel like I could do some real healing in that business because they have lost. They don't know who their customer is anymore. They don't care.
Right.
And I think that they think there is an endless line of people because people need to use the airlines and transportation, yes. That they can get away with some things. But the first airline that hires me to come in and bring that healing culture, because what's going to happen is not only will their customers benefit from it, their employees will be happy.
Yes.
They'll enjoy coming
to work. Yes. Yeah, when we think that we're more important than the customer, or the customer is, you know, secondary, you're definitely lost the game already. You know?
I can teach people how to get to work and look forward to getting to work. And that's pretty profound. You know, we've got consultants working in corporate America teaching human resources how to deal with millennials,
mm-hmm.
The millennial personality. And I used to laugh because I could see it coming, but it's already happened.
Oh, yeah.
It's already happened. So there's some principles, some basic human behaviors that we need to learn how to teach and preserve so that all of our experiences are better. So when you think about the different mm-hmm. kinds of experiences we have, you think about life, hospitals, funerals, go through, education system, the corporate environment, all of those things, the retail environment, just, you know, purchasing, waiting on a phone with a robot and all of those kinds of things. And I just read, did I tell you that about robot delivery? Did you see that article today?
Yeah, you said
San Francisco. Stuff came to me before I come
like
to
Eater
talk.
And an Eater 24. It had like okay, a,
so
a robot
check out my sites because I posted the one that the robots are coming.
Yeah.
And then I think I wrote the robots are here.
They're here.
These are delivery robots that are going to start delivering food.
Yep.
Why? Was it because maybe you people weren't very nice and now they got to go to robots? Come on. We can do better than that.
Oh, they have robot flippers now, too. I saw that the other day on I saw it on the news. There's a machine now that they those fast casual, fast food places to, flip hamburgers.
Yeah.
Machine bends down, picks it up.
Wow.
Over.
Oh, wow.
Mess up. Always shows up on time.
There's that.
Don't have any attitude.
I had to tell one of my favorite no call, no show stories. That's what we call in the restaurant business. No call. Yeah. If you don't call for your shift and you don't show up. So
I'm going to throw in real quick. I always say, no call, no show, no job.
No job. We had a coffee bar in the restaurant. And it opened up at 6 or 6:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And they had trained someone new. And we walk in and they're like, there's no coffee person. I'm like, what do you mean there's no coffee person? She's not here. And so, you jump back behind, you wear the cap or you do what you have to do. And so the next day, again, no call, no show. The third day, she shows up.
And
hi, how are you?
And she acts
I'm
like,
I'm all right. Like, no. It's like, we didn't see you the last couple of days. You didn't call. Well, no, I didn't. Why didn't you call? Well, I figured if I didn't call, you'd realize I wasn't going to be there. Oh. That makes perfect sense to me. Everything's fine and forgiven.
I know, huh?
That is good. I mean, shit. Where do I go? I mean, so it's really interesting because it was about not just teaching information and knowledge. I had to start. See, the general public thinks that you have all of these great professionals that walk in your door ready to hit the floor, hit the ground running. Yeah. And the truth is we open restaurants way too fast and we go to them too fast. We don't give them a chance to work out some of the kinks. But I had to teach some people how to speak. Complete a sentence. You can't walk up to a table and just stand there and stare at them. There has to be, and look, it happens commonly now that people shut down because they're so busy doing this. They'd much rather text to their table than actually have a conversation with them.
Right.
So I can heal that.
You can heal that. I know you can. And that's one of the things I work on too with my, especially at pre-shifts. I think that pre-shift is such a boring, usually it's a humdrum. All right, here's today's features. Here's this list. Regurgitate it back to me like a parrot. Now get on the floor and sell.
Tell the novice, the non-restaurant people what pre-shift is.
A pre-shift is basically supposed to be a meeting that you have before service to kind of get everyone together and go over some, operations. Racial stuff or details, and maybe
specials, training,
talk about specials, features, what we got going on tonight, what we're expecting for, covers or expecting for, and that's the number of people coming in, what reservations, any VIPs. But, number one, I am shocked how many restaurants do not even hold a pre-shift meeting.
Oh, there's that.
That's my one shocker. And then two, how freaking boring and just generic. And I mean, people just sitting around, on their phone.
On their phones, right.
On their
phones. I'll never forget the first time somebody pulled a phone out in one of my... They thought I had lost my mind for like the 100th time because there were other situations that would cause me to react like that. Someone pulled out a phone while I was talking.
What'd you do?
I took the phone.
I know.
I took the phone. No phone. Nobody's called. They're on my dime.
And I feel like Tom Hanks and in that movie, there's no crying in baseball. There's no phones at pre-shift. What are you doing?
Yeah. So
give me that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a meanie. I remember a young woman was bartending and at Ben 36, we needed to measure our, wine out. So why do you do that? Because I would have them pour cranberry and water we had 2 ounces, 2.5 ounces, 6 ounce glasses. And you want each of the wines to go out the right level. Yeah. You don't want to underport because you don't want to cheat them. You don't want to overport because you don't want to overserve people. Mm-hmm. And so I went up to the bar and I said, where are your measures? And she says, oh, I'm trying to get away from that. I said, well, when you open your own restaurant and raise the money and go through the design and the headache, I said, open your own place. You'll get to make those decisions. But I mean, and so one of the servers came up and ordered something and she put the wrong. I said, that's not the glass that goes in. And then she said, are you just going to stand here and be mean to me? Mm-hmm. And I said, well,
yes,
I said, you know, when you leave here, you're going to leave here better than you came to me. And I'm responsible for that. And I know you're an aspiring actress, but you will not get to sit on David Letterman's couch if you don't apply the same work ethic here that pays your rent and it allows you to eat and do your craft, because I want you to be successful, because I want you to give me credit one day on national TV. But training you means I care about you. I care about your experience.
Yes. And that's the biggest thing I think a lot of people miss out, is that when we're working with our team in a restaurant, we're not just teaching them restaurant skills. We're teaching them life skills. I mean, communication, you know, using body language. Oh, my God. These are, you know, and especially if you're on the service team or sales team, you know, if you're a server or waiter, I mean, teaching skills of influence.
Sure.
Oh, those are so powerful. How to manage your state, how to manage your energy. Those are mm-hmm. skills that will help you for the rest of your life.
Sure. The proudest things that I've seen since I've had the restaurant are the people that went on to open their own restaurants, mm-hmm. Running wine programs in other parts of the country and other parts of the world.
Right.
I watched marriages happen. And next generations be born. Awesome. Some of the best managers and owners in the business. I had incredible mentors. I mentioned Rick Bayless and some other people mm-hmm. That I have worked with. But this is something we take and then we pass on.
Yes.
That you share because you want people to, you know, have a fulfilling life and to be recognized for mm-hmm. The commitments that they've made and the knowledge that they've garnered. And there's nothing more satisfying to see people come into their own.
Exactly. You know, I love that one analogy you had. And I'm telling you, if there's any restaurant owners out there or, you know, who are listening to this, if you can adopt this kind of philosophy, this little piece of information that Brian dropped, he had the kind of inspiration that, you know, his restaurant was his dream and every day he walked into his dream.
Yeah.
How many restaurant owners out there right now? Honestly, I'm looking at you, looking at you guys out there. I don't know where the camera's at. How many restaurant owners out there honestly feel honored and privileged to walk into their dream every day? Cause that's really what you have. You are walking into your dream that something that was in your head, you brought to life, you know? And that is just an amazing gift that you have and such an amazing privilege you have. And to take it to, you know, and to treat it for anything less than what it is a privilege and an honor. You are doing not only yourself a disservice, but you're doing your community a disservice and stuff like that. And it is a blessing. The restaurant industry, I've been in it 35 years myself. Again, I've had some heartaches. I've had some, you know, bad times, but I'm telling you also, everything that's ever happened that's great in my life came from being in a restaurant business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's there are certain vocations, careers mm-hmm. that are, I believe, are callings.
Yes.
And so if you work in a hospital, I want the people who are taking care of me to have a calling. I don't want it to be their job.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really big difference that somebody that comes to your table or comes up to you in a bar and they say, y'all ready to order?
Oh.
Or let's start at the door. When you walk in for a reservation and you walk in and you say, hi, and they say, how many?
Yeah.
Or go wait in the bar. Yeah. I'm like, I made a reservation. You aren't expecting me. First of all, that's what I used to work the door at my restaurant. just to open it and close it and say goodnight and say, hi, how are you? Just to be at every stage of the experience. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I might show up at your table, show you some wine or just bring you a table. But it's amazing. Or you walk in, people don't say hello.
I'll tell my Brian Duncan story. So Brian has, Brian gets a lot of press in Chicago, especially when Bin 36 was really, the hot place and it was really, really hopping. This is like early 2000s. And, I'd seen him in magazines and stuff like that. And so I'm walking down to Bin 36 one night after I'm going in and Brian was there and he opened the door. And I recognized you, from the magazines and stuff. I sent your picture and I thought you were leaving, right? Because you opened the door. I didn't ever think that the owner would be standing there opening the door for people.
2 o'clock that morning.
I'm like, this is like crazy. I thought it's like, oh, he's leaving for the night. That's cool. Yeah. But nope, there you were working it.
There's something about, I got really busy, juggling, making wine and selling wine and then being in the restaurant. I didn't realize I couldn't be three people, but, I'm glad I got to
be every bit
of it, and
I'm waiting for cloning.
Yeah. But I didn't have anybody compare myself to, and all these things happened so organically. I had these amazing winemakers that were willing to sell me fruit and to, produce the kind of wines that I wanted to make. Yeah. I knew everybody seemingly in the industry, because I love to travel and, you just want to share with people. So, there's something about making that connection. People would say to me, I love this. This is another one of my personality traits. I remember your face. I will remember what you ate and what wines I paired a year later. I will not remember your name.
Oh yeah, I know.
Right? So I'd have people come in and they'd say, you don't remember me, do you?
And you'd be like,
and I'm like, I served you a Northern Italian white Pinot Noir table wine, but you had never seen one in your life. And then they realize I actually do remember the experience, but I just don't remember their name.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you tell me a name, I think I know too many people already, because I would meet like 300-400 people a day in the restaurant. And so when you give me a new name, one would jump out my ear and then I have to start all over again. But
well, you catalog by wines. That's why.
Yeah. So what you have to eat and drink.
Catalog people by wine. That's all right, as we wrap up here, always great to talk to you. I always appreciate talking to you. And I'm going to be in Chicago for the restaurant show.
Awesome.
And Foodable.io, Foodable TV has a big event. They call it the Foodable.io. It's a big kind of disruptors kind of thing. It's actually the Friday before.
I should be the president of that if it's a disruptor thing.
It is. You better be there, actually. Okay. It's a Foodable.io disruptor event.
I'm RSVPing now.
It's May 19th, Friday in Chicago. I think the website is foodable.io. They have tickets available. I'm going to be actually one of the moderators for one of the panels, so I'm definitely going to be there. But we have to get together.
Yes.
This trip, and we got to get some wine. All right.
Done.
Sound good?
Committed.
All right. And what was that one? And your website again?
There. www.go-wine.com. And then everybody knows me on Down to Earth and on Facebook and
all
of that. And,
follow Brian, too. Brian has great stuff on Facebook. I'll tell you, if I'm having a kind of a down day, and trust me, even as a restaurant coach, I have down days now and then. I mean, your Facebook page usually has some great inspiration, and the photography is fantastic.
Thanks. I wanted my Facebook post to be the oasis on Facebook because all the other stuff that was going on there was
it's crazy.
Just a lot of angry people. So I wanted people to come to my place and giggle.
Awesome. Always a pleasure, my friend.
All right.
Appreciate you.
What a great opportunity. It's good to see you. You look great.
You look great, too. Like we know with the hair. It looks good.
I sleep more. I go to bed earlier than I used to.
I don't sleep at all. Still, I don't sleep. I get lost. I love what I do so much. I just get so wrapped up in it that I definitely, they talk about flow, and just being in that kind of just state where you're just like just jamming. The next thing I know, I look up, it's 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm like, oh my God, I got to go to bed because I get up in like 4 or 5 hours. So,
Well, my secret is I go to bed like by 9:30. That was unheard of. I was just getting going usually in the restaurant business.
Right. I know. 9:30 is like
But I'm up and I'm praying first thing in the morning, every morning around 5:30. That's my foundation. That's why I'm the happiest guy in the world.
You gotta have some gratitude. You gotta have some, you know. And whatever you gotta be well grounded. You gotta find something to center yourself in this business. Because this business is definitely a roller coaster. Yep. And if you don't find some kind of activity to ground yourself, trust me, you will go on the roller coaster ride every single day. I call it, when I talk to my clients, I call it self-care. No matter what you want to do, if you want to pray, you want to meditate, you want to go for a walk, you want to hit the gym, you want to read a book, you want to journal, you just want to sit there and drink your coffee in silence and have no one bother you.
All those things you just named made me tired. I'll stick with the prayer.
stick with the prayer, my friend. All right. Always great. All right. Great, you have a great one. Thank you so much.
Now what do I do? Do I just leave the room? Or are people going to still be able to see me? Or?
No, I'm going to end the broadcast here. So.
Okay. All right. Good night, everybody.
Goodbye.
Good night. What?
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.donaldburns.net or download episodes at iTunes and Stitcher Radio.